Seeker's boots thumped onto the street. Somehow the instincts of all those who had used the blade before had fused with his own. He wore their knowledge, experience, and skill like a second skin. He let the magic guide him, but it was driven before the storms of anger and his will. He turned loose the hunger to kill and slipped through the lines of men. Deft as death, his blade found its first mark and Amriswith went down. "Don't squander your strength killing those others can kill," the spirit voices told him. "Kill only those they can't." Richard heeded the voices and let his inner sense feel the Amriswith around him, some concealed in their capes. He danced with death, and death occasionally found them before they saw him coming. He killed without wasted effort or extra thrusts. Each commitment of his blade found flesh. Richard stalked along the lines, seeking the scaled creatures that led the blood of the fold. He felt the heat of the fires as he moved through the streets hunting. He heard the hisses of surprise as he spun into them. His nostrils filled with the stink of their blood. It became one long blur of fighting. Still, he knew it wasn't going to be enough. With a feeling of drowning and dread, he knew it wasn't going to be enough. There was only one of him, and if he made the slightest mistake, there wouldn't even be that. It was like trying to wipe out a whole ant colony by stepping on one ant at a time. Already, Yabri were coming closer than he had intended to allow. Twice they sang along his flesh, leaving red tracks. But worse, all around his men were dying by the hundreds, with the blood of the fold merely coming in behind to slaughter the wounded. The fighting stretched on endlessly. Richard glanced at the sun and saw that it was halved at the horizon. Night was descending like a shroud over the last gasps of the dying. He knew that for him, too, there would be no morning. Richard felt a stinging slice along his side as he spun. Amriswith's head burst apart in a red spray as he caught it with his sword. He was tiring, and they were getting too close. He brought the blade up, ripping open the belly of another. He was deaf to their death howls. He remembered Kaelin. There was going to be no morning. For him, for her, death was coming for them like the darkness. With effort, he forced her from his mind. He couldn't afford the distraction. Turn, blade up, taking off a claw, twist, slice to the gut, spin, blade down on the smooth head, thrust, duck, cut. The voices spoke to him, and he reacted without question or pause. With choking consternation, he realized that they were being pushed to the center of Aidendrill. He turned and looked beyond the large square swept with the turmoil, disorganization and confusion of the brawl of battle to see the Confessor's palace not a half mile away. Soon the Amriswith would break through the lines and pour into the palace. He heard a loud roar and saw a mass of Dharan soldiers behind the enemy lines charge into the blood of the fold from a side street, turning their attention from the fight at the front. From the other side, a light number poured in, pinching off a large number of crimson-caped men in the wide thoroughfare. The Dharans hacked into the pocket of the blood of the fold, cutting them to pieces. Richard stilled to a statue when he saw Kaelin leading the charge from the right. She was leading not only Dharan troops, but men and women of the palace staff. His blood ran cold as he remembered how the people at Ebenicia had joined in the defense of the city at the end. What was she doing? She was supposed to be at the palace where it was safe. He could see that while it was a bold move, it was going to be fatal. There were too many of the blood, and she would be trapped in the middle of them. Before that could happen, she pulled the men back. Richard lopped off the head of Amriswith. Just as he thought she must have retreated to safety, she made another stabbing attack from another street at a different place in the line. The crimson-caped men at the front turned to the new threat, only to be set upon from behind. The Amriswith blunted the effectiveness of the tactic and soon sliced into the new front with the same deadly efficiency they had been using all afternoon. Richard cut a line straight through the mass of crimson capes toward Kaelin. After fighting Amriswith, men seemed slow and dull by comparison. Only the distance made it a struggle. His arms were weary and his strength was flagging. "Kaelin, what are you doing?" The rage of the magic powered his voice as he snatched her by the arm. "I sent you to the palace where you would be safe." She pulled her arm away. In her other hand, she held a sword slick with blood. "I will not die cowering in a corner of my home, Richard. I will fight for my life. And don't you yell at me." Richard spun when he felt the presence. Kaelin ducked as blood and bone glutted the air. She turned and shouted orders. Men wheeled to the attack at her word.
"Then we die together, my queen," Richard whispered,
not wanting her to hear his resignation. Richard felt the massing of Amriswith as the lines were pushed back to the square. The sense of their presence was too overpowering to pick out individuals. Over the heads of the sea of red capes and polished armor, he could see something green in the distance advancing toward the city. He couldn't make meaning of it. Richard shoved Kaelin back. Her protest was cut short when he spun into the line of scaled creatures as they became visible right before them. He danced through their charge, cutting them down as fast as he could move. Through his frenetic onslaught, he saw something else he could make no sense of. Spots. He thought it must be that he was so tired he was beginning to see a sky full of spots. He screamed with rage at a Yabri that came too close. He lopped off the arm and then the head in quick succession. Another blade came at him, and he ducked under it, coming up sword first. He backhanded another with the knife in his other hand. He had to kick the one behind before he had time to yank his sword free. With cold fury, he realized that the Mriswith had finally determined that he was their only threat and were surrounding him. He could hear Kaelin screaming his name. He could see beady eyes everywhere. There was nothing he could do and nowhere to run, even if he wanted to. He felt the sting of blades that came too close before he could stop them. There were too many. Dear spirits, there were just too many. He didn't even see any soldiers close anymore. He was surrounded by a wall of scales and flashing three-bladed knives. Only the rage of the magic slowed them. He wished that he had told Kaelin he loved her instead of yelling at her. Something brown flashed in his side vision. He heard a howl from a Mriswith, but it wasn't one he killed. He wondered if confusion was what you felt when you died. He was dizzy from spinning, from swinging his sword, from the bone-jarring impacts. Something huge dropped from above, then another. Richard tried to wipe Mriswith blood out of his eyes in an effort to tell what was happening. All around, Mriswith howled. Richard saw wings, brown wings. Furry arms were flashing in his vision, twisting off heads, claws rent scales apart, fangs ripped into necks. Richard stumbled back as a huge gar thumped to the ground right in front of him, tumbling the Mriswith back. It was Gratch. Richard blinked as he glanced around. There were gars everywhere. More were coming, up in the air. That was the spots he had seen. Gratch heaved a ripped Mriswith into the blood of the fold and lunged at another. The gars all around tore into them. More dropped from the darkening sky atop Mriswith all along the lines. There were glowing green eyes everywhere. The Mriswith shrouded themselves in their capes, becoming invisible, but it did them no good. The gars could still find them. They had nowhere to run. Richard held the sword in both hands, gawking. Gars roared, Mriswith howled, Richard laughed. Kaelin's arms clamped around him from behind.
"I love you," she said in his ear. "I thought I was going to die and I hadn't told you."
He turned and looked into her wet green eyes.
"I love you."
Richard heard shouts over the cries of battle. The green he had seen were men. There were tens of thousands of them, charging into the rear of the Blood of the Fold, pouring in around buildings, crushing the crimson-caped men back. The Dharans on Richard's side, free of the Mriswith, rallied and tore into the blood with the deadly competence they were known for. A huge wedge of the men in green cleaved through the Blood of the Fold, coming toward Richard and Kaelin. To each side, dozens of gars set upon Mriswith. Gratch flailed into them, ramming them back. Richard climbed up on a fountain to better see what was happening. He took Kaelin's hand and helped her up beside him. Men surged in to protect him, driving the enemy back.
"They're Kel'Tans," Kaelin said. "The men in green uniforms are Kel'Tans."
At the van of the Keltish charge was a man Richard recognized, General Baldwin. When the general saw them on the fountain, he and a small guard peeled away from his main force of men, shouting orders as he departed, and cut a line through the crimson-caped men, their horses trampling men underfoot like autumn leaves. The general hacked at a few with his sword for good measure. He broke through the battle lines and reined in before Richard and Kaelin standing on the fountain. General Baldwin sheathed his sword and bowed in his saddle, his heavy serge cape fastened at one shoulder with two buttons draped to one side, revealing the green silk lining. He came up and clapped a fist to his tan surcoat.
"Lord Rawl," he said with reverence.
He bowed again.
"My queen," he said with even more reverence.
Kaelin leaned toward him when he came up, her tone ominous.
"Your what?"
Even the man's shiny pate reddened. He bowed again.
"My most glorious, esteemed queen and mother confessor?"
Richard tugged the back of her shirt before she could speak.
"I told the general here how I had decided to name you the Queen of Kelton."
Her eyes widened.
"The Queen of..." "Yes," General Baldwin said as he glanced about at the battle. "It kept Kelton together, and our surrender unbroken. As soon as Lord Rawl told me of this great honor, that we were to have the Mother Confessor as our queen, just as Galea, showing how he honors us as our neighbors, I brought a force to Adendrell to help protect Lord Rawl and our queen, and to join in the battle against the Imperial Order.
I didn't want either of you to think we aren't prepared to do our part. Helin finally blinked and straightened.
Thank you, General. Your help came just in time. I am most appreciative.
The General pulled off his long black gauntlets and tucked them through his wide belt. He kissed Kaelin's hand.
If my new queen will excuse me, I must return to my men. We have half our force spread out behind just in case these traitorous bastards try to escape.
He blushed again.
Pardon the soldier's language, my queen.
As the General returned to his men, Richard scanned the battle. The guards were searching, looking for more Mriswith and finding only a few. Those didn't last long. Gratch looked to have grown another foot since Richard had last seen him, and was now the size of any of the males. He seemed to be directing the search. Richard was dumbfounded, but his joy was tempered by the scale of the carnage before him.
Queen, Kaelin said. You named me Queen of Kelton, the Mother Confessor?
It seemed a good idea at the time, he explained.
It seemed the only way to keep Kelton from turning on us.
She appraised him with a small smile.
Very good, Lord Rawl.
As Richard finally sheathed his sword, he saw three spots of red break through the dark leather of Dharn uniforms. The three Mordsith, a geel in hand, came at a run across the square. Each wore her red leather, but it did a poor job this day of disguising the blood all over them.
Lord Rawl! Lord Rawl!
Verdine flew at him like a squirrel flinging itself for a branch. She landed on him, webbing him in arms and legs, knocking him back off the wall and into the fountain full of snowmelt. She sat up on his stomach.
Lord Rawl, you did it! You took the cape off like I told you. You heard my warning, after all.
She fell on him again, clutching him in red arms. Richard held his breath as he went under. Though the icy water wouldn't have been his choice, he was glad for the excuse to wash off some of the stinking Mriswith blood. He gasped for air when she grabbed his shirt in her fist and hauled him up. She sat in his lap, legs around his middle, and hugged him again.
Verdine, he whispered. My shoulder is hurt. Please, don't squeeze so hard.
It's nothing, she announced in true Mordsith disregard for pain. We were so worried. When the attack came, we thought we would never see you again. We thought we had failed.
Kaelin cleared her throat. Richard held out an introductory hand.
Kaelin, these are my personal guards, Kara, Reyna, and this is Verdine. Ladies, this is Kaelin, my queen.
Verdine, making no attempt to get off his lap, grinned up at Kaelin.
I'm Lord Rawl's favorite.
Kaelin folded her arms as her green-eyed glare darkened.
Verdine, let me up.
You still smell like a Mriswith.
She shoved him back in the water and again hauled him up by his shirt.
That's better.
She pulled him closer.
You ever run off like that again without listening to me, I'll do more than give you a bath.
What is it about you and women and baths?
Kaelin asked in an even tone.
I don't know.
He looked out over the battle still raging and then back to Verdine's blue eyes. He hugged her with his good arm.
I'm sorry. I should have listened to you. The price of my foolishness was too great.
Are you all right?
She whispered in his ear.
Verdine, get off of me. Let me up.
She flopped off his lap to the side.
Kolo said that the Mriswith were enemy wizards who traded their power for the ability to become invisible.
Richard gave her a hand up.
I nearly did, too.
She stood in the water on her tiptoes and pulled his shirt collar aside, inspecting his neck. She let out a relieved sigh.
It's gone. You're safe. Kolo said how the change came, how their skin began to scale over. He said that that ancestor of yours, Ulrich, created a force to battle the Mriswith.
She pointed.
Garz.
Garz?
Verdine nodded.
He gave them the ability to sense Mriswith, even when they were invisible. That's what gives the Garz eyes that green glow. Because of this interrelationship of magic all the Garz share, those who dealt directly with the wizards accrued dominance over the others, becoming something like the wizards' generals among the Garr nation. These intermediary Garz were greatly respected by the other Garz, and got them to fight alongside the people of the New World against the enemy Mriswith, driving them back to the Old World.
Richard stared in astonishment.
What else did he say?
I haven't had time to read anymore. We've been kind of busy since you left.
How long?
He stepped out of the fountain and addressed Kara.
How long have I been gone?
She glanced to the keep.
Nearly 2 days, night before last. Today, at dawn, the sentries came in a lather and said the blood of the foal were right on their heels. They attacked shortly after. The fighting has been going on since this morning. At first it was going well, but then the Mriswith...
Her voice trailed off.
Keelan put an arm around his waist to steady him as he spoke.
I'm sorry, Kara. I should have been here.
He stared in a daze at the sea of dead.
This is my fault.
I killed too,
Reyna announced without any attempt to mask her pride. Ulic and Egan came at a run and spun to a stop in defensive positions.
Lord Rawl, Ulic said over his shoulder. Are we ever glad to see you? We heard the cheer, but every time we got to you, you were somewhere else.
Really?
Kara said, lifting an eyebrow.
We managed.
Ulic rolled his eyes and turned toward the battle.
Are they always like this?
Keelan whispered in his ear.
No, he whispered back. They're on their best behavior for you.
Richard saw white flags flying among the blood of the fold, but no one paid them any heed.
The Harrens give no quarter,
Kara explained when she saw where he was looking.
It is to the finish.
Richard hopped down off the fountain. When he strode off, his guards immediately followed. Keelan caught up with him before he had taken three strides.
What are you doing, Richard?
I'm putting a stop to this.
You can't do that.
We have sworn to kill the order to a man. You must let it be done. That's what they would have done to us.
I can't do it, Keelan. I can't.
If we kill them all, then others of the order will never surrender, knowing it would mean death. If I show them that we will take them prisoner instead of killing them, then they'll be more willing to quit. If they are more willing to quit, we win without losing the lives of so many of our men, and that makes us stronger. Then we win.
Richard started shouting orders. They were carried through the ranks of his men, and the din of battle slowly began subsiding. The eyes of thousands began turning to him.
Let them through, he told a commander.
Richard went back to the fountain and stood on the wall, watching the commanders of the Blood of the Fold lead their men to him. All around Aharon's bristling steel stood guard. A corridor opened, and the crimson-caped men stepped forward, glancing from side to side as they came. An officer halted at their lead before Richard. His voice was hoarse and subdued.
Will you accept our surrender?
Richard folded his arms.
Depends.
Are you willing to tell me the truth? The man glanced about at his quiet, bloody men.
Yes, Lord Rawl. Who told you to attack the city?
The Mriswith gave us instructions, and many of us were instructed in our dreams by the Dreamwalker.
Do you wish to be free of him? They all nodded or spoke up in weak voices. They also readily agreed to telling everything they knew about any plans that they knew of that the Dreamwalker and the Imperial Order had. Richard was so exhausted and in such pain that he could hardly stand. He drew anger from the sword to sustain himself.
If you wish to surrender and be subjects of Dharan rule, then go to your knees and swear loyalty.
In the fading light, accompanied by the groans of the wounded, the remaining Blood of the Fold went to their knees and gave the devotion as they were instructed by the Dharans who joined in. In one mass voice that carried through the city, they all bowed heads to the ground and took the oath.
Master Rawl, guide us. Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours.
As the men all tore off their crimson capes, casting them in fires as they were led away to be guarded for now, Keelan turned to him.
You have just changed the rules of the war, Richard.
She looked out over the carnage.
So many have died already.
Too many,
he whispered, as he watched the empty-handed Blood of the Fold marching off into the night, surrounded by the men they had tried to kill. He wondered if he was crazy.
In your mercy we are sheltered, Keelan quoted from the devotion. Perhaps it is meant to be this way.
She put a comforting hand to his back.
I know it somehow feels right.
Not far off, Mistress Sanderholt, holding a bloody meat cleaver, smiled her agreement. Glowing green eyes gathered in the square. Richard's black mood brightened when he saw Gratch's gruesome grin. He and Keelan hopped down and hurried to the gar. It had never felt so good to be enfolded by those furry arms. Richard laughed with tears in his eyes as he was lifted from the ground.
I love you, Gratch. I love you so much.
Gratch, la, Gratch, hug.
Keelan joined the hug and then received her own separate embrace.
I love you too, Gratch, and you saved Richard's life. I owe you everything.
Gratch gurgled with satisfaction as he stroked a claw down her hair. Richard swished at a fly.
Gratch, you have blood flies.
Gratch's self-satisfied grin widened. Gars used the flies to help flush out their quarry, but Gratch had never had any before. Richard didn't want to swat Gratch's blood flies, but they were becoming more than annoying. They were stinging his neck. Gratch bent, scooped a claw through the gore of a dead Mriswith, and smeared it across the taut pink skin of his abdomen. The flies obediently returned to feast. Richard was astonished. He peered around at all the glowing green eyes watching him.
Gratch, you look like you've had quite an adventure. You gathered all these gars together?
Gratch nodded with a clear look of gar pride.
And they did what you asked.
Gratch thumped his chest with authority. He turned and grunted. The rest of the gars returned the odd grunt. Gratch smiled, showing his fangs.
Gratch, where's Zed?
The leathery smile withered. The hulking gar sagged a bit as he looked over his shoulder up at the keep. He turned back, his glowing green eyes dimming a bit, as he shook his head sorrowfully. Richard swallowed back the anguish.
I understand, he whispered. Did you see him killed?
Gratch thumped his chest, lifted his fur out atop his head, apparently a sign for Zed, pointed at the keep, and put his claws over his eyes, Gratch's sign for Mriswith. Through his signs and Richard's questions, Richard was able to determine that Gratch had brought Zed to the keep. There had been a fight with many Mriswith. Gratch had seen Zed lying unmoving on the ground with blood running from his head, and then Gratch could no longer find the old wizard. The gar had then gone in search of help to fight the Mriswith and protect Richard. He had worked hard to find the other gars and to gather them to his purpose. Richard hugged his friend again. Gratch held him in a long embrace and then backed away, looking for the other gars. Richard felt a lump rising in his throat.
Gratch, can you stay?
Gratch pointed one claw at Richard, another at Kaelin, and then brought them together. He thumped his chest and then pointed behind at another gar. When it came forward to stand beside him, Richard realized it was a female.
Gratch, you have a love? Like I have Kaelin?
Gratch grinned and thumped at his chest with both claws.
And you want to be with the gars, Richard said.
Gratch nodded reluctantly, his smile faltering. Richard put on his best smile.
I think that's wonderful, my friend. You deserve to be with your love and your new friends. But you can still visit us. We would love to have you and your friend any time. All of you, in fact. You're all welcome here.
Gratch's smile returned.
But Gratch, can you do one thing for me, please? It's important. Can you ask them not to eat people? We won't hunt gars and you won't eat people, all right?
Gratch turned to the others, grunting in an odd guttural language that the others understood. They offered grumbling murmurs of their own, and a conversation of sorts seemed to ensue. Gratch's growling words rose in pitch, and he thumped his massive chest. He was at least as big as any of them. They all finally offered a hooting assent. Gratch turned to Richard and nodded. Kaelin hugged the furry beast again.
Take care of yourself, and come see us when you can. I'm always in your debt, Gratch. I love you. We both do.
After a last embrace with Richard that needed no words, the gars took to wing and vanished into the night. Richard stood beside Kaelin, surrounded by his guards, his army, and the specter of the dead. Chapter 54 Richard awakened with a start. Kaelin was curled up with her back to his chest. The wound in his shoulder from the Mriswith Queen ached. He had let an army surgeon put a poultice on it, and then, too exhausted to stand any longer, he had fallen onto the bed in the guest room he had been using. He hadn't even taken off his boots, and the uncomfortable pain in his hip told him that he still wore the Sword of Truth, and he was lying on it. Kaelin stirred in his arms, a feeling that swelled him with joy, but then he remembered the thousands of dead. The thousands who were dead because of him, and his joy evaporated.
"Good morning, Lord Rawl,"
came a cheery voice from above. He frowned up at Kara and groaned in greeting. Kaelin squinted in the sunlight, streaming in the window. Kara waggled a hand over the two of them.
"It works better with your clothes off,"
Richard frowned. His voice came as a hoarse croak.
"What?"
She seemed mystified by the question.
"I believe you will find such things work better without clothes."
She put her hands to her hips.
"I thought you would know at least that much.
Kara, what are you doing in here?"
"Ulic wanted to see you, but was afraid to look, so I said I would. For one so large, he can be timid at times."
"He needs to give you lessons."
Richard winced as he sat up.
"What does he want?"
"He found a body."
Kaelin rubbed her eyes as she sat up.
"That shouldn't have been hard."
Kara smiled, but it vanished when Richard noticed it.
"He found a body at the bottom of the cliff, below the keep."
Richard swung his legs over the edge of the bed.
"Why didn't you say so?
Kaelin rushed to catch up with him as he charged out in the hall to find Ulic waiting.
Did you find him? Did you find a body of an old man?
No, Lord Rall. It was the body of a woman.
A woman? What woman?
She was in bad shape after all this time, but I recognized those gapped teeth and tattered blanket. It was that old woman, Valdora, the one who sold those honey cakes.
Richard rubbed his sore shoulder.
Valdora? How odd. And the little girl? What was her name?
Holly. We saw no trace of her. We found no one else, but there's a lot of area to search, and animals could have... Well, we may never find anything.
Richard nodded, words failing him. He felt the shroud of death all around him. Kara's voice turned compassionate.
The funeral fires will begin in a while. Do you wish to go?
Of course.
He checked his tone when he felt Kaelin's tempering hand on his back.
I must be there. They died because of me.
Kara frowned.
They died because of the blood of the Fold, and because of the Imperial Order.
We know, Kara, Kaelin said.
We'll be there just as soon as I see to the poultice on his shoulder and we get cleaned up. The funeral fires burned for days. 27,000 were dead. Richard felt as if the flames carried away his spirits, as well as those of the men who had died. He stayed and said the words along with the others, and by night stood guard over the flames along with the others until it was done. From the light of this fire and into the light, safe journey to the spirit world. Richard's shoulder worsened over the next few days, getting swollen, red, and stiff. His mood was no better. He walked the halls and occasionally watched the streets from the windows, but talked to few people. Kaelin strolled at his side, offering her comforting presence, remaining quiet unless he spoke. Richard couldn't banish the image of all the dead from his mind. He was haunted by the name the prophecies had given him, the bringer of death. One day, after his shoulder had begun to heal at last, as he sat at the table he used as a desk, staring at nothing, there was a sudden light. He looked up. Kaelin had come in, and he hadn't even noticed. She had pulled the drapes open to let in the sunlight.
Richard, I'm starting to worry about you.
I know. I can't seem to make myself forget.
It's right for the mantle of rule to be heavy, Richard, but you can't let it crush you.
That's easy to say. It was my fault that all those men died.
Kaelin sat on the table in front of him, and with a finger lifted his chin.
Do you really think that, Richard?
Or are you just feeling sorry that so many had to die?
Kaelin, I was stupid. I just acted. I never thought. If I would have used my head, maybe all those men wouldn't be dead.
You acted on instinct. You said that that was the way the gift worked with you, sometimes anyway.
But I...
Let's play what if. What if you had done it differently, as you now think you should have?
Well, then all those people wouldn't have been killed.
Really? You're not playing by the rules of what if. Think it through, Richard. What if you had not acted on instinct and had not gone to the Slif? What would have been the result?
Well, let's see. He rubbed her leg. I don't know, but things would have worked out differently.
Yes, they would have. You would have been here when the attack came. You would have gone to fight the Mriswith in the morning instead of at the end of the day. You would have been worn down and killed long before the guards arrived at dusk. You would be dead. All these people would have lost their Lord Rall.
Richard tilted his head up.
That makes sense. He thought about it a moment. And if I hadn't gone to the old world, then the Palace of the Prophets would be in Jigang's hands. He would have the prophecies.
He stood and went to the window, looking out on the bright spring day.
And no one would have any protection from the Dreamwalker because I would be dead.
You've been letting your emotions control your thinking.
Richard came back and took up her hands, truly noticing how radiant she looked.
Wizard's third rule, passion rules reason.
Kolo warned that it was insidious. I've been breaking it by thinking I had broken it.
Kaelin slipped her arms around him.
Feeling just a little better, then?
He put his hands on her waist as he smiled for the first time in days.
You've helped me see. Zed used to do those kinds of things. I guess I'll just have to count on you to help me.
She hooked her legs around him and pulled him closer.
You had better.
As he gave her a little kiss and was about to give her a bigger one, the three Mord Sith marched into the room. Kaelin put her cheek against his.
Do they ever knock?
Rarely, Richard whispered back. They enjoy testing. It's their favorite thing to do. They never tire of it.
Kara, in the lead, came to a halt beside them, looking from one to the other.
Still with the clothes, Lord Rahl.
You three look well this morning.
Yes, we are, Kara said. And we have business.
What business?
When you have the time, some representatives have arrived in Adendrill and have requested an audience with the Lord Rahl.
Verdine brandished Kolo's journal.
And I would like to have your help with this. What we already learned has helped us, and there is much more yet that we haven't translated. We have work to do.
Translate? Keelan asked.
I know many languages. What is it? Hi, Daharan, Verdine said, taking a bite out of a pear in her other hand. Lord Rahl is getting even better at Hi, Daharan than me.
Really? Keelan said. I'm impressed. Few people know Hi, Daharan. It's an extremely difficult language, I'm told.
We worked on it together, Verdine smiled. At night.
Richard cleared his throat. Let's go find out about the representatives. He boosted Keelan with his hands on her sides and set her on the floor.
Verdine gestured with her pear. Lord Rahl has very big hands. They fit perfectly over my breasts.
One eyebrow went up over a green eye.
Really? Yes, Verdine observed. He had us all show him our breasts one day.
Is that right? All of you?
Kara and Reyna waited without expression as Verdine nodded. Richard put a hand over his face. Verdine took another bite of her pear.
But his big hands fit best over my breasts.
Caitlin ambled toward the door.
Well, my breasts aren't as large as yours, Verdine.
She slowed as she passed Reyna.
I think Reyna's hands would fit mine better.
Verdine choked and coughed on her bite of pear as Caitlin strolled from the room. A smile spread on Reyna's lips. Kara burst into a hearty laugh. She clapped Richard on the back as he walked past.
I like her, Lord Rahl. You may keep her.
Richard paused. Well, thank you, Kara. I'm fortunate to have your approval. She nodded earnestly.
Yes, you are.
He hurried out of the room, finally catching up with Caitlin down the hall.
How did you know about Verdine and Reyna?
She regarded him with a puzzled frown.
Isn't it obvious, Richard? The look in their eyes? You must have noticed right away, too.
Well, Richard glanced back down the hall to make sure the women hadn't caught up yet.
You'll be happy to know that Kara said she likes you and that I'm allowed to keep you.
Caitlin slipped an arm around his waist.
I like them, too. I doubt you could find guards who would better protect you.
Is that supposed to be a comfort? She smiled as she leaned her head against his shoulder.
It is to me.
Richard changed the subject.
Let's go see what these representatives have come to say. Our future, everyone's future, hinges on this.
Caitlin, wearing her white Mother Confessor's dress, sat silently in her chair, the Mother Confessor's chair, beside Richard under the painted figure of Magda Cirrus, the first Mother Confessor, and her wizard, Merritt. Escorted by a smiling General Baldwin, Representative Garthram of Liffany, Representative Thurault of Hirschborg, and Ambassador Bezencourt of Sandaria, crossed the expanse of polished marble floor. They all seemed surprised and pleased to see the Mother Confessor sitting beside Richard. General Baldwin bowed.
My queen, Lord Rahl.
Caitlin smiled warmly.
Good day, General Baldwin.
Gentlemen, Richard said, I hope all is well in your lands. What have you decided?
Representative Garthram smoothed his gray beard.
After extensive consultation with the rule at home, and with Galia and Kelton leading the way, we have all decided that the future lies with you, Lord Rahl. We have all brought the surrender documents, unconditional, as per your request. We wish to join with you, to be part of Dahara and under your rule.
The tall Ambassador Bezencourt spoke up.
While we are here to surrender and join with Dahara, it remains our hope that the Mother Confessor approves.
Caitlin considered the men for a moment.
Our future, not our past, is where we and our children must live. The first Mother Confessor and her wizard did what was best for their people and their time. As the Mother Confessor now, I and my wizard Richard must do what is best for ours. We must forge what we need to fit our world. But our hopes are for peace, as were theirs. Our best chance for strength that will ensure a lasting peace lies with Lord Rahl. Our new course has been set. My heart and my people go with him. As the Mother Confessor, I am a part of this union, and I welcome you to it.
Richard returned the squeeze of his hand.
We will continue to have our Mother Confessor, he said. We need her wisdom and guidance as much as we always have.
A few days later, on a fine spring afternoon, as Richard and Caitlin strolled hand in hand through the streets, checking on the cleanup of the destruction from the battle, In the construction that was already beginning to repair what had been destroyed, Richard had a sudden thought. He turned, feeling the cool breeze and warm sun on his face.
You know, I've demanded the surrender of the lands of the Midlands, and I don't even know how many there are, or all their names.
Well, then I guess I have a lot to teach you, she said. You'll just have to keep me around.
A smile overcame him. I need you now and always. He cupped her cheek.
I can't believe we're together, at last.
He glanced up at the three women and two men not 3 paces behind them.
If only we could be alone.
Kara arched an eyebrow.
Is that a hint, Lord Rawl?
No, it's an order. Kara shrugged.
Sorry, but we can't follow that order out here. You need protection. Do you know, Mother Confessor, that we sometimes have to tell him which foot to use next? He sometimes needs us for the simplest of instructions.
Keelan was overcome with a helpless sigh. Finally, she looked past Kara to the towering men behind.
Ulic, did you see to it that those bolts were installed on the door to our room?
Yes, Mother Confessor.
Keelan smiled.
Good. She turned to Richard. Shall we go home? I'm getting tired.
You have to wed him first, Kara announced. Lord Rawl's orders. No woman allowed into his room except his wife.
Richard scowled.
I said except Kaelin. I never said wife. I said except Kaelin.
Kara glanced to the Aegil, hanging on the thin chain around Kaelin's neck. It was Denna's Aegil. Richard had given it to Kaelin in a place between worlds where Denna had taken them to be together. It had become a sort of amulet, one the three Mordsith had never mentioned, but had noticed from the first instant they saw Kaelin. Richard suspected it meant as much to them as it did to him and Kaelin. Kara's cavalier gaze returned to Richard.
You charged us with protecting the Mother Confessor, Lord Rawl. We are merely protecting our sister's honor.
Kaelin smiled when she saw that Kara had finally managed to nettle him, something she was rarely able to do. Richard took a calming breath.
And a fine job you're doing of it. But don't you worry. By my word, she'll soon be my wife.
Kaelin's fingers idly stroked his back.
We promised the Mud People that we would be wedded in their village by the Birdman, in the dress Westland made for me. That promise to our friends means a great deal to me. Would it be all right with you if we were wedded by the Mud People?
Before Richard could tell her that it meant as much to him and was his wish too, a crowd of children swarmed around them. They pulled at his hands, begging him to come watch as he had promised.
What are they talking about? Kaelin asked as she let out a joyful laugh.
Jala, Richard said.
Here, let me see your Jala ball, he said to the children. When they handed it up, he tossed it in one hand, showing it to her. Kaelin took the ball and turned it around, looking at the gold letter R embossed on it.
What's this?
Well, they played with a ball called a brock that was so heavy that children were constantly getting hurt with it. I had the seamstresses make up new balls that are light, so all the children can play, not just the strongest ones. It's more a game of skill now instead of just brute force.
What's the R for?
I told them that anyone willing to use this new kind of ball would get an official Jala brock from the palace. The R stands for Rawl, to show that it's an official ball. The game was called Jala, but since I changed the rules, they call it Jala Rawl now.
Well,
Kaelin said, tossing the ball back to the children.
Since Lord Rawl promised, and he always keeps his word.
Yes,
one boy said.
He promised that if we used this official ball, he'd come watch.
Richard glanced to the gathering clouds.
Well, there's a storm coming, but I guess we have time for a game first.
Arm in arm, they followed the gleeful crowd of children up the street. Richard smiled as he walked.
If only Zed were with us.
Do you think he died up at the keep?
Richard glanced up the mountain.
He always said that if you accept the possibility, then you make it real.
I've decided that until someone proves it otherwise to me, I'm not going to accept his death. I believe in him. I believe he's alive and out there somewhere, causing someone trouble.
The inn looked to be a cozy place, not like some they had been to, with too much drinking and too much noise. Why people wanted to dance whenever it got dark was beyond him. Somehow the two seemed to go together, like bees and flowers, or flies and dung, dark and dancing. People sat at a few tables, having a quiet meal, and one of the tables near the far wall was crowded with a group of older men, smoking pipes, playing a board game, and sipping ale as they engaged in lively conversation. He caught snippets of phrases about the new Lord Rawl.
You keep quiet, Anne warned, and let me do the talking.
A
friendly-looking couple behind a counter smiled at their approach. The woman's cheeks dimpled.
"Evening, folks."
"Good evening," Anne said.
"We would like to inquire about a room. The boy at the stable said you had nice rooms."
"Oh, that we do, ma'am. For you and your..."
Anne opened her mouth. Zed beat her to words.
"Brother, Reuben is the name. This is my sister Elsie. I'm Reuben Ribnick."
Zed flourished a hand.
"I'm a cloud reader of some note. Perhaps you've heard of me. Reuben Ribnick, the famous cloud reader."
The woman's jaw moved as if in search of where all her words went.
Yes, I believe I have." "There you go," Zed said, patting Anne on the back. "Nearly everyone's heard of me, Elsie."
He leaned on an elbow toward the couple behind the counter.
"Elsie thinks I make it up. But then she's been off on that farm with those poor unfortunates who hear the voices and talk to the walls."
In unison, the two heads swiveled toward Anne.
"I worked there."
Anne managed to get out between her clenched teeth.
"I worked there helping the poor unfortunates who were our guests." "Yes, yes," Zed said. "And a fine job you did, Elsie. Why they let you go, I'll never understand."
He turned back to the mute couple.
"Since she's out of work, I thought to take her out in the world with me. Let her see what life's all about, don't you see?"
"Yes,"
the couple said as one.
"And actually," Zed said, "we'd prefer two rooms, one for my sister and one for me."
They blinked at him.
"She snores," he explained. "I need my sleep."
He gestured toward the ceiling.
"Cloud reading, you know, demanding work."
"Well, we have lovely rooms," the woman said, her cheeks dimpling again. "I'm sure you will get a good rest."
Zed shook a cautionary finger.
"The best you have, mind you. Elsie can afford it. Her uncle passed on, left her everything he had, and he was a wealthy man."
The man's brow drew down. "Wouldn't he be your uncle, too?"
"My uncle? Well, yes, he would, but he didn't like me. Little bit of trouble with the old man. He was a morsel eccentric. Wore socks as mittens in the dead of summer. Elsie was his favorite."
"The rooms," Anne growled.
She turned and bulged her eyes up at him.
"Reuben needs his sleep. He has a lot of cloud reading to do and must be at it early in the morning. If he doesn't get his sleep, he gets the oddest burning rash in a ring around his neck."
The woman started around the counter.
"Well, let me show you to them, then."
"That wouldn't be roasted duck I smell, would it?"
"Oh, yes," the woman said, turning back. "That's our dinner tonight, roasted duck with parsnips and onions and gravy, if you've a desire for some."
Zed inhaled deeply.
"My, but it does have a delightful aroma. Takes talent to roast a duck just right, but I can tell by the fragrance that you've gotten it right, no doubt about it."
The woman blushed and giggled.
"Well, I am known for my roasted duck."
"It sounds lovely," Anne said. "If you could be so kind, would you send it up to our rooms?"
"Oh, of course, it would be my pleasure."
The woman started them down the hall.
"On second thought," Zed said, "you go ahead, Elsie. I know how nervous you get to have people watch you eat. I'll take my dinner out here, madam, with a pot of tea, if you don't mind."
Anne turned and shot him a scowl. He could feel the collar at his neck heat.
"Don't be long, Reuben. We must get an early start."
Zed waved a dismissive hand.
"Oh, no, my dear. I'll just have my dinner, perhaps a game with these gentlemen, and then be off to bed straight away. See you in the morning, bright and early, so we can be off to show you the world."
Her glare could have boiled pitch.
"Good night, then, Reuben."
Zed smiled indulgently.
"Don't forget to pay the kind woman and add something extra for her generosity with the large helping of her excellent roasted duck."
Zed craned his neck toward her with a weighty look, his voice thinning.
"And don't forget to write in your journal before bed."
She stiffened.
"My journal?"
"Yes, the little travel journal you keep. I know how you like to write about your adventures, and you haven't been keeping up to date like you should. I think it's about time you did."
"Yes,"
she stammered.
"I will then, Reuben."
Once Anne had gone, sending warning glances at him the whole way, the gentleman at the table, having heard the entire conversation, invited him over. Zed spread his maroon robes and descended among them.
"Cloud reader, you say?" one asked.
"The very best."
Zed held up a bony finger.
"Cloud reader to kings, no less."
Astonished whispers passed around the table. A man to the side took his pipe from his teeth.
"Would you do a cloud reading for us, Master Reuben? We'd all put in and pay you a bit."
Zed held up a thin hand as if warding them off.
"I'm afraid I couldn't."
He waited for the disappointment to build.
"I couldn't accept your money. It would be my honor to tell you what the clouds had to say, but I won't take a copper."
Smiles returned.
"That's most generous of you, Reuben."
A heavyset man leaned in.
"What did the clouds have to say?"
The innkeeper set a steaming plate of roasted duck before him, diverting his attention.
"I'll have your tea shortly," she said as she hurried off to the kitchen.
"The clouds had much to say about the winds of change, gentlemen. Dangers and opportunities. About the glorious new Lord Rahl and the... Well, let me have a taste of this succulent-looking duck, and I'll be delighted to tell you all about it."
"Dig in, Reuben," another said.
Zed savored a mouthful, pausing dramatically to sigh with pleasure as the men all watched with rapt attention.
"That would be a mighty strange necklace you wear."
Zed tapped the collar as he chewed.
"They don't make 'em like this anymore."
Squinting, the man pointed his pipe stem at the collar.
"Doesn't seem to have a clasp. Looks to be one piece. How'd you get it down over your head?"
Zed unfastened the collar and held it out for them, working the two halves on the hinge.
"Yes, it does. See? Mighty fine work, isn't it? A person can't even see the workings because they're so delicate. Master workmanship. Don't see things like this anymore."
"That's what I always say," the man with the pipe said. "You don't see fine workmanship anymore."
Zed snapped the collar back around his neck.
"No, you don't."
"I saw an odd cloud today,"
a hollow-cheeked man to the other side said.
"Strange cloud. Snake-like it was. Wriggled in the sky sometimes."
Zed leaned in and lowered his voice.
"You saw it, then?"
They all leaned in.
"What's it mean, Reuben?"
one whispered. He looked from eye to eye.
"Some say it's a tracer cloud, hooked on a man by a wizard."
Zed was satisfied by the gasps.
"What for?" the heavyset man asked, the whites of his eyes showing all around.
Zed made a show of looking about at the other tables before he spoke.
"To track him, and know where he goes."
"Wouldn't he see such a cloud, all snake-like and all?"
"There's the trick to it, I'm told,"
Zed whispered as he used his fork to demonstrate.
"It points down at the man followed, so all he would see is a tiny dot, kind of like looking at the tip of a cane. But those off to the side see the whole of the cane."
The men awed and leaned back with this news, digesting it as Zed dug into the roasted duck.
"Do you know about these winds of change?" one finally asked. "And about this new Lord Rahl?"
"Wouldn't be a cloud reader to kings if I didn't,"
Zed brandished his fork.
"It's a mighty good tale, if you gentlemen have a mind to hear it."
They all leaned in again.
"It all started before, in the ancient war," Zed began, "when were created the ones called Dreamwalkers."
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Blood of the Fold by Terry Goodkind. Copyright 1996 by Terry Goodkind, and performance copyright 1999 by Brilliance Corporation, all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Corporation, Post Office Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.